Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. In this video, we're going to take a quick look at the atrocities of the British Army against the Boers in South Africa. This happened in the period 1899 to 1901, and it is in the Second Anglo-Boer War. The Boers and the British had fought before in the First Anglo-Boer War, where the British had tried to annex the Transvaal Republic. I have discussed before how the Boers left the Cape Colony and wanted to find some land for themselves where they could settle, along with the Battle of Blood River and their struggles against the Zulus, etc., etc. So after all that stuff with the Great Trek and fighting the Zulus, the Boers eventually managed to get two Boer republics. Two Boer republics that were able to survive and sustain themselves. And the one in the north was called the Transvaal Republic, and the one to the south of it was known as the Orange Free State. So finally, after decades of struggle and fighting and battling forward, the Boers had eventually got their own countries. And finally, they were free. They were free from the British. They had managed to get the British off their backs. They had a place where they were living, and they set up their republics, and their main enemies were really blacks, black tribes. But the Boers were handling the black tribes. They were handling them through diplomacy and through warfare. And they actually even had blacks who teamed up with them, and then they'd go and fight other blacks. So the Boers weren't many people, but they were able to survive by themselves in Africa. The total Boer population, I think, of both republics together came to about 1.5 million people by the end of the 1800s. And the Boers had big families. They lived mostly a rural life. They had some towns. There were also other whites that were moving around Africa as well. And these whites, some of them came and lived in the Boer republics, others were just traveling around, others were exploring. And then whites began to realize that there are gold and diamonds in these Boer republics. So the British still had two colonies. They controlled the south, which was the Cape Colony, and they controlled Natal. Natal, which had for a short time been under Boer control. So you had these Boers in their own countries, and then the British controlled the colonies along the coast. But when people began to realize that they are discovering gold and diamonds, and more people came to investigate this, they then began to discover that there is a huge amount of gold and diamonds. And in the Cape Colony to the south, the enemy of the Boers was actually Cecil John Rhodes. He was basically an Englishman, but a Freemason. And he's actually the guy who's responsible for the creation of what is now known as Zimbabwe and Zambia, which was originally called Northern Rhodesia and Southern Rhodesia. And Cecil Rhodes was actually a Freemason, and he worked for Rothschild in Britain. And there's a very, very interesting book, which I need to look at later and see how we can go through this thing. It's an incredibly fascinating book written in South Africa in the 1950s. And that book contains a bunch of very, very fascinating stuff. And in there, in that book, it quotes Rhodes as talking about my master, Mr. Rothschild. And that book was written by an Englishman here in South Africa in the 1950s, and that book was even read by Queen Elizabeth. It's a very fascinating book with a real story of the English viewpoint of what all the British got up to in South Africa. So the next thing you know is the British start agitating in all kinds of weird ways, sticking their nose into the business of the Boers, because now you had all these people who want to mine and who want to come and live in these Boer republics, and these people are known as the Uitlanders. They are basically the foreigners. And these are white foreigners who now want to live in the Boer republics. But now you start seeing these British agitating, and they're agitating and saying, oh, the Boers are maltreating the Uitlanders. They are starting to mess with the Boer democracies that existed. And I must just stress that the Boers in the Transvaal and the Free State had their own democracy. They had their own parliament. They had their own voting system. By the way, they did not have political parties. As I understand it, the Boers had a system where the candidate that you voted for went and represented you in their parliament. How different is that to this political party system that exists around the world, where you can vote for people, but the people are more loyal to the political party than to you, the voter? Well, the Boers had a system like that. They voted for their own representatives, and their representatives had to account for themselves in their own parliament. The Boers were a white democracy in Africa, doing their own stuff, and they were quite happy and quite fine. And they weren't a threat to any other whites anywhere else in the world. In fact, the Boers at all times were pro-white. The Boers were racists. They wanted to get away from the Cape Colony. They hated liberalism. They hated being treated by the British as equals to the non-whites. They hated all of that. That's why they wanted their own countries. And after decades of their own personal struggle, funding themselves, taking their own risks in battle against black tribes and black nations, and defeating them, the Boers finally have got their own republics. And their own republics are actually acknowledged by the British. There's an actual treaty. There are treaties where the British acknowledge that these are legal republics. But suddenly, after gold and diamonds are discovered, then you find that all of a sudden now everybody in Britain is interested in the internal affairs of the Boers, and they're all complaining, and there's this whole campaign against the Boers. Oh, the Boers are maltreating the Uitlanders, this and that and the other. And the next thing you know is the British army is pouring into South Africa. The British army is pouring into South Africa, and they're attacking these Boers. But the Boers haven't done anything. And then there's still the Freemason, Cecil John Rhodes. He's got some people up in what is southern Rhodesia, and he's also trying to create a war. So what Cecil Rhodes is doing is he's got guys like Dr. Jameson, and he actually tries to invade the Transvaal from what later became Rhodesia. And these Boers find that, you know, here's a military force of Englishmen coming from the north invading their country. And they didn't pose a threat to the Rhodesians. They didn't pose a threat to... So here's all this Anglo agitation against the Boer republics now. And the Boers are not a threat to anybody. They didn't attack anyone. They didn't attack the Rhodesians. They didn't attack the British. One thing you'll find about the Boers is that never at any time in the history of the Boers, even in this disgusting war that we're going to look at with these atrocities, never at any time ever did the Boers engage in atrocities against white people. Never. There isn't a single incident. You will not find a single incident where Boers went and murdered or tortured or harmed anyone, including the very soldiers who came to kill them and destroy their republics. Never at any time. You will not find a single instance of the Boers harming or torturing or killing anyone, even among those troops that come to kill them. They treat the British well at all times. Even when they've captured British prisoners of war, they treat them well. This is a lot like the Germans, where you'll never find examples of Germans engaging in rape and all that kind of stuff. I will return to the topic of discipline in the German army as a separate issue. And this very war that took place, at the time that this very war took place, in the Austro-Hungarian Empire, was a young German called Adolf Hitler. And when this war was raging, Adolf Hitler read every single thing that he could find about this war as this war was raging. He was fascinated to bits by this war. And he was amazed by what the Boers were able to do. The Europeans who watched this were disgusted with the conduct of the British in South Africa. Across Europe, the Europeans all across Europe were disgusted by what the British got up to against the Boers. It was common knowledge. And when this war was over, the president of the Transvaal Republic, Paul Kruger, went into exile in Switzerland. And Hitler was a fan of Paul Kruger. And later, when Hitler came to power in Germany, Hitler in his speeches even mentioned the fact that the British were the inventors of concentration camps. And that's because he studied this war and he knew exactly what had gone on in this war. Here's a quote from Mayor Amschel Rothschild. And it says, "Our goal is to win ultimate control of the wealth, natural resources, and manpower of the entire world." Here's a photograph. Here are two photographs from the Anglo-Boer War. There you can see a Boer on his horse. Here you can see Boer men at one of the battles. Let's take a look at this top photo here. It says, "The Scorched Earth. 30,000 farms and all the implements were destroyed and the farmsteads ransacked as shown." So here you can see they are busy tearing up the place, but they did more than just ransack the farmsteads. You'll see them blowing them up and setting them on fire. In this photo on the bottom, you can see all the dead horses, and it says the remains of 1,500 horses wantonly killed by British troops, as were more than 1,000,000 sheep and goats and hundreds of thousands of head of cattle. So you can see just dead horses everywhere killed by the British army. What was left? So here you can see in this top photo, this is a church. The British didn't just destroy their homesteads and kill their animals. They even destroyed the churches. The church at Bethel, Eastern Transvaal, as many others, completely destroyed by British troops in their efforts to break the spirit of the Boers. And this is the British, who were apparently Christians, doing this to the Boers. In this photo on the bottom it says, "After the war, all that was left to resume life on a farm. Yet with measly and double-edged financial assistance from Britain and no foreign aid, they became the backbone of South Africa's development. So here you can see a family, and they've got what looks like a goat or something there, and all they've got is that and their ox wagon and whatever is in the ox wagon. So the British have destroyed everything, destroyed the farms, killed the animals, destroyed the implements. The Boers have got nothing. Yet the Boers still made a comeback. In this photo here on the top, you can see from homes to concentration camps, women and children in open railway trucks on their way to concentration camps, where 27,251 of them were done to death. Though I've seen more recent numbers where they say the real number killed was actually more than 30,000, more like 32,000 died. And while thousands of white Boer women died, tens of thousands of Boer children died. So of those numbers, I think more than 22,000 were children, white children. So here's a cemetery, and it says, from concentration camps to the cemetery. The concentration camp cemetery at Bethuli, Orange Free State. And it says that 22,074 children died in those concentration camps. So there's just one cemetery of many cemeteries. Who the British were fighting against? So here you can see a guy who is 79 years old. It says 79-year-old burger. Burger is just Afrikaans for citizen. Burger van Brakel. And 2 8-year-old prisoners of war at Bermuda. So apparently a 79-year-old man and 8-year-old kids actually were seen as enemy troops, and they were sent to Bermuda. Lots of Boer prisoners of war were also sent to St. Helena, the same place where Napoleon died. So these are prisoners of war in this particular case, apparently. So it seems like a 79-year-old Boer guy is still dangerous, and a little 8-year-old kid is apparently dangerous. And then in the bottom, you look at emaciated children. The children, I don't know the full story behind how the children got to be like this, because they definitely weren't like this when they went into the concentration camps. But here you can see a little child, a concentration camp child at Krugersdorp, here on the left. And here's another one, an emaciated child at the Bloemfontein concentration camp. This looks a lot more like the Holodomor in Ukraine in the time of Jewish Bolshevism there. Here's a quote from David Lloyd George, who was the British political leader in 1901, where he says, a policy of extermination of children in South Africa. And of course, it's not black children that they're busy exterminating. It's white children, it's Boer children that they are killing. And then in this top photo, to starve the Boers. So you've seen the horses being shot. Well, here are the sheep. So you can see all the dead sheep that have been shot here. Sheep wantonly killed by the British. Hundreds to thousands, if not millions, were murdered likewise to deprive the Boers of a livelihood. So the British come, they destroy your home, they steal your stuff, they destroy your equipment, they kill all your animals. So they've come to totally stop you from having a means to survive. And it says here in the bottom photo, poor women and children left on the veldt after their homes had been burnt down and their means of subsistence destroyed. So the British Army has visited the civilians, destroyed all their stuff, and, you know, this is how the white women and the children have to look after themselves. But I suspect that they actually get rounded up to the and sent off to the concentration camps, because they grabbed all the women and children and sent them to the concentration camps. In this top photo, it says, the way the war was fought. And the photo is not that good, but it's actually a farmhouse being blown up. So this is General Louis Botha's house, blown up by the British in their scorched earth campaign to break Boer resistance. So they come with their dynamite and they blow up your house. Here on the bottom photo, it says, farm burning by British forces. And the quote is from Captain March Phillips, and it says, we burnt the lot without inquiry. So basically, they just came around and they burnt everything that they could. So here you can see what looks like a farmhouse burning, being set on fire. But I suspect that if they can't burn it, that they blow it up. But one way or the other, it's bye-bye to the homes and the only things that the Boers have, hey? And here's a quote from Alfred Milner, and I think this is the same guy who actually came up with these schemes. Because Milner was the guy who was behind all this hideous stuff, was Milner. And so here's a quote from Milner. It says, the country is quiet, only it is a complete wreck. The farmhouses are all gone. Here in this photo here, it is about the British and the blacks. So it says, blacks removed from their homes by the British in training them for imprisonment in concentration camps. The Boers had quite a lot of blacks who were working for them and were on their side. And I think that in this case, it probably is the British grabbing the blacks who were loyal to the Boers and tossing them into concentration camps. I think that's what was going on there. In the bottom photo here, the British then armed other blacks. It says, blacks armed by the British in their war against the Boers. So you can see, here are these blacks. These blacks, as you can see, these blacks are pretty primitive, hey? And yet they've got a rifle, thanks to the British. And then, top photo, it says, methods to break Boer resistance. Women and children deprived of their homes being driven to the Pietermaritzburg concentration camp. So these women and children have to walk to the concentration camp. I have got other photos where the women and children are taken by ox wagon, by wagon, to the concentration camps. As much as I understand it, I think all the women and children from the farms ended up in concentration camps. They didn't leave them alone. Hey? So here's another example of Christian on Christian. Eh? It says, interior of the Dutch Reformed Church at Frankfort, Orange Free State, after destruction by the British. So here are these Christian British destroying churches. Here are some other photos that I've got from another source where you can see similar types of things. In these photos, you can see a farmhouse being blown up. So there's the farmhouse. There it's going. There the explosion has gone off. And this is the remains of the farmhouse. So if they can't set it on fire, then they blow it up. Here you can see a farmhouse that's been set on fire. So that's the end of that farmhouse. Plus, there was looting. In this case, there's a black guy. This black guy's been stealing from the Boer farmer's farm. Because they often toss out all the stuff from what's inside the house. So this black was stealing. This looks to me like this might be an Englishman. Whether the Englishman was also stealing, I can't tell you. But yeah, burn their stuff, blow their stuff up, steal their stuff. It's a good time, hey? And you must keep in mind that the men who came to South Africa came from all across the British Empire. You had men coming from Canada, white men coming from Australia, white men coming from New Zealand to come at the behest of the British to come and destroy the Boers. So you had white Anglo men from all across the British Empire coming to destroy everything of the Boers. And in this case, this is a photograph actually taken by one of them. So it says, members of New Zealand's 6th Contingent burn a Boer farm, 1901. This photograph may have been taken by Private William Raines. So here they're burning down the farm. New Zealanders burning down the farm. And here in the foreground you can see dead sheep. So again, you know, burn down the farm, kill all the animals, make sure that there's absolutely nothing left. Nothing left for the Boers. Boers get totally wiped out. Boers get totally wiped out so the stinking rich can steal the golden diamonds of South Africa. And then here is more looting. In this case, you can see they've been taking all the furniture, what little bit of furniture and stuff was in the farmer's house, everything's been taken out. So, you know, here is the magnificent British Army looting before they destroy the Boers' farms, eh? Destroy their homes, steal their stuff, kill their animals, destroy everything. You've never heard of whites doing this to blacks or Asians or anyone else. You've never heard of this kind of stuff. But the fantastic British Army and British Empire did this to a couple of Boer farmers living here in Africa, minding their own business and not posing a threat to the British Empire. Just sit and ponder that, eh? One thing that the British had that I'm very impressed with are these blockhouses. In order to try to stop these Boers from doing anything here in South Africa, the British eventually had to literally cut up South Africa into little squares. I'm not joking with you. They had to cut South Africa up into little squares. And remember, South Africa is huge, okay? It is several times bigger than France and Germany, okay? And so what they did was they came and they put up, I think it was barbed wire fences for thousands of kilometers, slicing the country up. And then along these barbed wire fences, they built these forts. And these forts are known as blockhouses. And there are still many blockhouses around in South Africa to this day. These blockhouses were the cheapest way to actually build fortifications, and the British built vast numbers of these things. And so if you look at them, you'll see that there are places where they can shoot out of. You can see there's a door. And these blockhouses were the cheapest form of fortifications that the British could build, and they built stacks of them in order to see to it that the Boers can't move. Because the Boers did not attack British women and children, the Boers actually were able to fight the British army. And believe it or not, even when the Boers right at the end were down to about 14,000 men, they were still clobbering the British army. They would move around with speed and they'd attack the British army and they would destroy their stuff, capture their goods. They were able to fight the British right to the end. They weren't like these wussified blacks of modern times with AK-47s. The Boers were very excellent guerrilla warriors, I must tell you. And if the Boers had not been destroyed like this, the Boers could probably have smashed the British army, given enough time. So here's another blockhouse. This is actually quite a nice one. And that's actually steel. You can see, I don't know exactly what they had on top here. Maybe this is where they could place a cannon. And that also looks a little bit like a place maybe where they could have put a cannon. And the rest you can see like the holes through which they can shoot. So the British built stacks of those things. And there are many of them still around in South Africa to this day. This is what a concentration camp looked like. There were many concentration camps. This is just one. And you can see mostly they live in tents, though there are a couple of buildings that, I don't know what those buildings are, whether they are toilets or whatever they are, but there are a couple of buildings in there. But the women and children actually live in tents. I've got another photo in winter, and you can see snow on the ground, because the Free State especially gets very, very cold. So women and children had to live in these little tents in hellishly cold weather. And here is a photo from inside one of those concentration camps. You can see the women and the children. And if you look at these kids, kids aren't looking bad, hey? The children are not emaciated. They're not emaciated when they get here, okay? Here's another photo from inside the concentration camp. Here is a Boer lady and her children, and they're inside a tent. You can see there she's got her cup of tea, and she's giving her children a meal with the tea. And look at these kids, eh? They're looking healthy. Mom's looking healthy. Children are looking healthy. So they're not sick, okay? But Lord Kitchener said that the white women don't know anything about hygiene. That's what Lord Kitchener said. Said that the children are dying because the mothers don't know about hygiene. That's what the lying scumbag Kitchener had to say. But if you look at these kids, they're looking very healthy. And then women and children died in the concentration camps. Here is a dead Boer lady. So she's dead, she's going to be buried. And here are little white children. Little white Boer kids, they're dead. Okay, there's one in his little coffin, he's being buried. So, yeah. 22,000 kids. And then you get these children that look like this. And there's no way those kids went in there looking like this. This looks a lot like the Holodomor in the Ukraine after Jewish Bolshevism. Look at these little children. You can't believe that they're even alive, hey? Look at that. Little white kids. And here's another one. This little girl apparently was still alive. These some of these photos, like this photo. These photos were taken by white British women who came from Britain because they heard about these camps. They came to look and see what was in, what was going on in these camps, and some of them were horrified, and they went back to Britain, and they even took photos. Like this photo was taken by one of those women. And they take these photos. This is a little Boer girl. Her name is Lizzie Van Sale. Lizzie Van Sale. And these photos were taken by those British women. And they went back to Britain and they said, look, these camps are freaking hideous. And here's a little wonderful thing from the Second Anglo-Boer War. This is from Christmas 1901. This is at the end of the war. And here is something that, to my knowledge, all the troops, all the British troops in South Africa received, all the British and colonial troops, received a personal present from the Rothschilds. So it says, with the compliments of the season from Lord Rothschild, Mr. Alfred de Rothschild, and Mr. Leopold de Rothschild. The Rothschilds, at their own expense, sent a card like this, along with a bunch of presents, to every single soldier in South Africa. Basically, to thank them for the good work that they were doing in South Africa. And what's that good work? It's destroying the Boers, destroying them in every conceivable way, so that the British and the Jews can steal the gold and the diamonds of the Boers. So here it says, this smart card accompanied the parcels received by Harry and his fellow soldiers from the Rothschild family. Each parcel contained a towel, some stationery, a portion of tobacco, two pipes, 12 packets of cigarettes, one book, one cake of chocolate, one plum pudding, and a pack of cards. Ever resourceful, Harry used the reverse of the label as notepaper on which to write a brief letter. So, of course, the Rothschilds sending these presents to all these soldiers because they're about to coin it big time by controlling a quarter of the earth's gold supply, which is lying inside these Boer republics. Here is another photograph of a concentration camp in South Africa. Here you can see a much, much bigger concentration camp. And you'll see that everyone's living in a tent, hey? They're living in a tent. This might even be near Bloemfontein. I have seen another one where you can see snow on the ground. But in this one, if you look carefully, it does look a little bit strange and whitish down the middle here. But that might not be snow. But I have seen one where there's proper thick snow on the ground. So Boer women and children living in that through those winters. And if you've been in South Africa, you'll know that the coldest place in South Africa is the Orange Free State. It's flat and it's freaking cold. The temperatures here get to be minus. It goes below freezing in South Africa, in the Free State. In those places like Bloemfontein, it can get freaking cold. It can get cold enough that people in America and Europe would understand, yeah, this is real cold. And so here you can see just these tents and women and children, white women and children, living in those tents 120 years ago. It's no wonder that many died. The Second Anglo-Boer War is actually an incredibly fascinating war, but it needs to be studied properly. And I can tell you now that there are still lessons. There are lessons that we can learn from it, even now. But I just want to focus again on this card from the Rothschilds. This thing came from a book that was published in 2007. And the book is called Soldier Boy. And I just want to give you some information because it was a South African outside South Africa who discovered this and sent this to me. So this is what he sent. Soldier Boy comprises letters written home by a New Zealander serving with the Imperial Forces in South Africa during the Boer War. He wrote letters or notes home on any available piece of paper or card that came into his possession. So that's why he got this card from the Rothschilds, and due to lack of paper, etc., he actually wrote a letter on the back of it. So that's how this thing was discovered. So this image is of this complimentary card which accompanied the Christmas hampers that were sent to all the Imperial troops. So the English South African who sent me this wrote the following: "If I were a soldier fighting for Queen and country, I'd expect a card from the British Royal Family or the War Office, but not some obscure, back then, Jewish family." So that just gives you a bit of input into this thing. You know, this obscure Jewish family that's not really well known, and they are sending Christmas hampers to every single soldier in the Imperial Army, which has just come to conquer and smash the Boers. And of course, what nobody really knows, what these white soldiers don't know, is that that's because this, let's call it obscure Jewish family in Britain is about to coin it. In my own research, I have been looking deeper into the issue of the Anglo-Boer War as a Jewish project. And all that I have been able to find is that there are some references inside Britain at the time that the British public began to realize that all of this agitation inside Britain against these Boer republics, that this is a Jewish project. There was a strong suspicion among many white British that this story about the need to go so far away to the other side of the earth to go and kill these farmers, these white farmers, that this is really a Jewish project, that Jews have been thinking this one up. But I would like to actually find more references to that time. But I did quite a bit of digging and I began to find academic papers where this type of stuff was coming up. So my thinking is that what you got here is just like Amschel Rothschild said, that they want to grab all the resources of the world. Basically, they want to grab all of the resources of all of the nations of the earth. And when these Rothschilds in Britain saw the vast quantity of gold and diamonds that had just been discovered in South Africa, that they probably went to the British elite and said to them, "Listen, man, all we have to do is go and kill these Boer farmers. There aren't many of them. They're going to be easy meat for our army. Just go and kill them and we seize all those gold and diamonds, and Britain will have the greatest reserves of gold on earth." At that time, it was a quarter of the earth's gold was estimated to be lying in these Boer republics. So next thing you know is British, Canadians, New Zealanders all rushing to come and kill Boers in this Jewish conceived project. Long before these fake social justice warriors, there were other whites, in this particular case, two very fine white English women, who heard about these concentration camps in South Africa and that actually it's pretty nasty. So this lady in the photo on the left, this is Emily Hobhouse. She might even be the original social justice warrior, but a social justice warrior who did something real for a good cause, not these bum causes that you see nowadays, all this anti-white claptrap. Emily Hobhouse was a British woman who heard about these concentration camps, and she wanted to come and take a look. And she came, and she is responsible for some of these photographs. And she went back to Britain, and she stirred up quite a storm over what she saw. And this lady on the right, this is Millicent Fawcett. And as a result of what Emily did, there was a Fawcett Commission which this lady ran. So here are two very fine white English women who did what whites normally do, which is they find the truth and stick up for the truth. But Emily Hobhouse is the ultimate heroine. If it wasn't for her, I'm sure many, many more would have died. I just want to discuss Lord Milner again. My friend Fani Kruger, who was the university lecturer, said to me that Lord Milner was the guy who was really responsible for all these atrocities. And Fani was convinced that Lord Milner might even have been Jewish. I've dug into this quite a lot, and I can't find proof that he was Jewish. But you never know. But I will show you what I did manage to find. I did find that Milner was very close to the Jews, and he was very pro-Jewish. And below the video, I'll put a link to some newspapers, and this stuff comes from Jewish sources. It actually comes from the Hebrew Standard from 1917, and in here it discusses Lord Milner and the Jews. So this is a translation from Hebrew, and it says, although the present cabinet in England, I assume, contains no Jews, it has in it many broad-minded friends of our people. Remember, this is written by Jews, so it's referring to whites in Britain who are Jew-friendly. And it is interesting at this moment to recall the attitude of one of its most distinguished and influential members, Lord Milner. When his lordship occupied the post of High Commissioner in South Africa, he was brought into frequent relations with Jews, and always his personal attitude was one of the most cordial character. Towards the end of the year 1902, he addressed a letter to a Zionist meeting in Johannesburg. Remember, by then Johannesburg had been conquered. Johannesburg was a Boer city, a Boer town. So you can see, after the British have won, you've already got Zionist Jews here in Johannesburg. And it continues, in which he expressed his repugnance of anything like an ungenerous attitude towards Jews of foreign origin, who are either already resident in the Transvaal, or may be intending to enter it. It quotes Milner, and it says, I have no prejudice against Jews as Jews. He went on, and I cannot think what has given rise to such an idea. Some of the best people I have ever known, some of my closest personal friends are Jews, and Jews extensively devoted to their race and religion. And then it's a bit of a mess in the translation. Something about have known the Jews as excellent, and then it says something like Zionists at the Cape, industrious, law-abiding, and thoroughly loyal. When the Jewish Board of Deputies of the Transvaal was established, Transvaal again being back in the Boer Republics, in the following year, Lord Milner was one of the speakers at the inaugural meeting and again paid a handsome tribute to Jews. So here's another quote from Lord Milner. The Jewish community of this colony, he said, is a very large and influential one. It is perhaps not quite so large as is commonly supposed. You would sometimes think to read certain newspapers, and those are not altogether friendly to the Jews, as there are some translation problems here. That of the whole of this community consisted exclusively of Jews. There Lord Milner put his finger upon a common error. How often might not the same impression have been left upon the minds of newspaper readers far nearer home? And then his lordship proceeded to make these salutary remarks. So this is Milner again. This great community has its own race traditions. I think the translation is actually, this great community has its own, has its Jewish, or it says J own, race traditions and race loyalty. Race traditions and race loyalty. Lord Milner is referring to Jews as a race, by the way. Anyway, it continues. There is absolutely nothing incompatible in this with the most thoroughgoing British patriotism. All of us who come from the old country have known many Jews who, clinging with intense devotion to their own race and religion, are as patriotic and public-spirited citizens as you can find anywhere in the world. So there is what Lord Milner says about the Jews. They are wonderfully patriotic to Britain, and they are so devoted to their own race and religion, and they are publicly well-spirited. So that's what Lord Milner says of the Jews. That the best people, some of the best people he's ever known in his life were Jews. Yeah. And so this article continues, there surely spoke the states, I am a man of insight. So this comes from a Jewish publication, and this is in the National Library of Israel. So whether Lord Milner actually converted to Judaism, maybe he didn't, but what you can see is that Lord Milner is totally, absolutely, massively a supporter of Jews. He thinks Jewish people are absolutely wonderful and they are totally patriotic to Britain. Take note of that. Because currently white Americans and the American elite think that Jews are patriotic to America. I'm afraid you're all in for some big surprises. Jews are not patriotic to anyone else. But I do find it interesting that Lord Milner was referring to Jews as a race, back in 1917. That's even before Hitler referred to Jews as a race. So it shows you, these are another people. But I think that gives us some pretty good ideas about what Milner thought about Jews. And as you can see, the Jews are just pouring into the Boer Republics. Why? Because there's money, okay? As someone else said to me, as another supporter said to me recently, he said, you will find Jews wherever there is money to steal. And I think that that is the real story of the end of the Boers and the globalization of South Africa by the British Empire, is that there was money to be stolen, and the Rothschilds were the prime thinkers of the plan to steal the money, just come and kill these European farmers, these Dutch German farmers, just let's go and kill them, and we're going to steal all their stuff, smash them into the ground, steal all their stuff, and bing bang boom, Britain is going to rock. Let me tell you that we do not know how much money the British Empire actually got out of South Africa. Because Britain controlled South Africa right until the time when Hendrik Verwoerd turned this country into a republic and the Jews hated him and had him killed. I did a video about that. All I want to say is that until the 1960s, when the whites, the Boer Afrikaners, finally managed to break away from the British, until then, South Africa was a dominion of the British Empire. It was under British control. And David Irving, the fantastic truth-telling historian David Irving, has said that during World War II, when the British needed to get weaponry, the British in their mad, insane rush to fight the Germans, and they decided to go to the Americans, they needed to pay up for the weapons that they were going to get. They sent Navy ships to South Africa and loaded them up with gold. We do not know how much gold, South African gold, Boer gold, was loaded onto British Navy ships and sent to America, so that is the deposit for the money that the British are going to loan from the Americans. And just to let you know, the British spent decades and decades and decades paying that loan back. And they only paid it off in recent decades. It's only very recently that the British finally paid off the last of their loans from America. And in their mad, insane rush to destroy Germany, and they were using Boer gold to pay for a large part of this, the Boer gold was the deposit for this. And just to let you know that, of course, by the time this loan was eventually paid off, the British Empire is long gone. It's long gone. History. So they fought the Germans and stole the Boer gold to pay for fighting the Germans, and they lost everything. So that's what came of that Jewish project. And now the British are finding themselves being colonized by Pakistanis, Indians, and Nigerians, and Britain is turning into a non-white state. So if I look at that and I look at the situation of the Boers in South Africa, I still think that, you know what, the Boers made better decisions. The Boers might be in a tough spot at the moment, but you know what, I still think the Boers are in a better place today than the British. The British have lost everything. And the British, these Jew-loving British, have most certainly made the most horrific decisions which cost them everything they had. If they had just left Hitler alone, they would still have the British Empire. One could even have done a what-if history of what would the history of Southern Africa have been if the British had colonized other states like Rhodesia, etc., but the British had left the Boers alone. What would have happened then? But here you have a project. Go and kill your kith and kin. Go and kill other white people. Steal their stuff. And you're going to be rich. So there's a Jewish project for you. And now you know how the Boer Republics disappeared. However, it must be said that even despite all this, despite all the things that they did to the Boers, The Boers, like the Germans, pieced their lives together and started again and managed to recapture South Africa. And when they did, and they came up with apartheid, and I know that there are some who try to say, no, we didn't invent apartheid. Forget that stuff. That's the kind of argument that the last white president, weakling and fool, F.W. de Klerk, he made those kinds of statements. Oh, we didn't invent apartheid. He actually said that in Britain. I've got it on video. Don't buy into that stuff. Let's not go down that wussified angle of trying to moralize everything away. Let's just admit how things really were. Whites were racists. Whites in Africa were always racists. We never saw the blacks as our equals. The British were the first to force this on us. But when apartheid rose to its greatest height, led by the Dutchman Verwoerd, Verwoerd was the guy who got apartheid the furthest, and the Jews killed Verwoerd, which I have done a video about. The fact is that Verwoerd turned around and he said that this South Africa is owned by all the whites, including the English speakers. And again, you will find that the Boers went to great lengths to accommodate English-speaking whites. And apartheid South Africa was owned by the Afrikaans and the English whites. All whites were part of that thing, and all whites were allowed to move up in that thing. There were even generals who were Englishmen who ended up being senior generals in the SADF, etc. But sadly, the problem with the English in South Africa is they just can't let go of their Jewish stuff. The English are so Judaized, the English in England, as well as the English outside of England, are so Judaized that they can't tell the difference between themselves and a Jew. And, you know, this stuff of Lord Milner, oh, the best people I've ever known were Jewish, I have so many Jewish friends, Jews are so patriotic, etc. That man was an idiot. The Jews were crawling all over him, and he's a fool. Oh, these Jews are so loyal, they're so patriotic. Yeah. The elite in America are thinking the same thing, and you'll see what happens to America. Keep watching America. Jews brought in Barack Obama, the first black president of America. Jews are working as part of the elite to destroy Donald Trump, the only white guy that white Americans actually feel close to. He's not perfect, but they do understand that he's basically one of them. You'll see. You'll see what Jews do. So either Lord Milner was a closet Jew, a crypto Jew, or perhaps he was just a white Englishman who was a total fool. Totally fooled by Jews. And there are tons and tons of whites who are fooled by these people. But that's the story. That, in a nutshell, is a little bit of the background to this whole business of the Second Anglo-Boer War and why the British had to come and slaughter the women and children and destroy all the civilian infrastructure. Was because if they didn't do that, the Boers, a tiny group of Dutch, German, French farmers might actually have defeated the greatest army, the greatest professional army in the world at the time. That's the truth. And I must mention before I go that the Boer men who were fighting and the Boer women who were in the concentration camps, they did have people who moved between the concentration camps and the Boer soldiers. And the women kept telling the men, carry on fighting. The women kept encouraging the men to carry on fighting, despite what was happening to them in the concentration camps. The Boers had no intention whatsoever. just like the Germans in World War II. The Boers had no intention whatsoever of giving up their republics. They carried on until they had nothing, just like the Germans.
And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites, thank the whites.